Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week, Dr. Don Levy. You know him. He's the director of the Siena Poll at the Siena College Research Institute. Find out more at scri.siena.edu. We welcome back Dr. Don Levy to the Capital Connection. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic, David. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
It's always a pleasure to talk about the numbers when it comes to especially people like the governor of New York State and Kathy Hochul. And that is where I'd like to start. She certainly has some challengers, both on the Democratic side and on the Republican side. The question really that I have is her alone. How is Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, doing, Dr. Don Levy?
Well, Kathy Hochul, at this point in time, she just can't win over a majority of New Yorkers. Her favorability ranking, you know, do you have a favorable or unfavorable view of her, sits at 42 favorable, 47 unfavorable, changed just a couple of points from last month. But she's never been able to cross 50% in the percent of New Yorkers who view her favorably. She does a little bit better when we say, well, what do you approve or disapprove of the job she's doing? So moving a little bit from her personal charisma, perhaps, to her nuts and bolts doing the job. Here she's at right at that 50% number. 50%, half of New Yorkers approve, 45% disapprove. She's been hovering there for a bit, and that's up from where she was a little over a year ago, when she was only garnering about 39-40% job approval. But the number that probably is somewhat troubling for the governor, and it's a high bar, we ask what we call the generic reelect question. Looking ahead to the next gubernatorial election, would you vote for Kathy Hochul or would you vote for someone else? And there, when we don't name someone else, Governor Hochul only gets the support of 37%, and this mythical someone else candidate gets the support of 55%. So there is this underlying sense of we'd like somebody else to come in and do a little bit better job. Right now, 50% of New Yorkers feel as though the state's headed in the wrong direction. There's concerns, continuing concerns about affordability in general, housing affordability specifically, dramatic concerns really hovering about health care, Medicaid, the effects perhaps that this big, beautiful bill may have on the SNAP program, and of course continuing concerns over the role that ICE is playing in deporting migrants in our state. So there's a lot of issues that New Yorkers are concerned about. And at this point, when we say, how about someone else, excuse me, someone else beats Kathy Hochul by 18 points. But that, as I'm sure you're going to ask, is where the story only begins.
It certainly is. Boy, was I jumping to get in there. Don Levy of the Siena Poll. It is so true. And more people want someone else to be governor, but not when it comes to a declared Democratic candidate, her own lieutenant governor, Antonio Delgado. Wow, was that something to watch when that came out. And I see in your poll, she's crushing him 49% to 12%, so they don't want the lieutenant governor.
Well, you know, here's a quiz question for you. Name the last five or six lieutenant governors in the state of New York. Antonio Delgado remains relatively unknown to New Yorkers. 58% say they don't have either a favorable or unfavorable opinion of him. So he's got a long way to go just to be known. Similarly, Representative...
And yet, Don, he was a congressman.
He was a congressman, but across the state, whether it be Long Island, whether it be upstate New York City. He remains virtually unknown. Richie Torres doesn't do any better. 60% of New Yorkers don't have an opinion about Representative Torres. And when we do a three-way primary, as may very well occur next June, Kathy Hochul versus Antonio Delgado versus Richie Torres, Kathy Hochul wins huge. She's up 37 points over Delgado, 39 points over Torres. She's sitting right now amongst just Democrats right at 49%. She's way ahead. Now, we just saw a primary in New York City, so you never say never. But right now, given the hill that lies ahead to climb for Delgado and Torres, and of course, there's a hill that Kathy Hochul could fall down, but right now, she's way ahead in a Democratic primary.
Yeah, and I think that's the point you make. It's a snapshot. There is a long time in this news cycle between now and 2026.
Yeah, unquestionably, and much will happen. Similarly, when we flip over to the Republican side, and again, we know that former Congressman Lee Zeldin, now Secretary Zeldin, came quite close to Kathy Hochul in the last election, came within 6.5 points. So is it possible for a Republican to win here in blue New York, where there's two Democrats for every one Republican? Certainly there's a chance. So let's look at who's in the race. Congressman Stefanik, Elise Stefanik, Congressman Mike Lawler, County Exec Bruce Blakeman. It's sort of a stepladder of recognition. Blakeman is unknown to 67% of New Yorkers. Perhaps his name recognition is localized to Nassau County or Long Island in general. Mike Lawler, unknown to 55% of New Yorkers. And Elise Stefanik, the most well-known of these three. And again, you seem at first a little surprised. You know, Elise Stefanik has been in the national news. She was in Republican leadership. She was, you know, slated to be at the UN. But still, 43% of New Yorkers don't have an opinion of Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Favorability, she's a bit underwater. 25 favorable, 32 unfavorable. Lawler's about a break even. Blakeman is about a break even, but unknown. So then we say, okay, let's pit them against Kathy Hochul. Who is jumping to the top as a potential challenger? And Blakeman is down by 25 to Kathy Hochul in a head-to-head. Stefanik down by 23, and Lawler by 20. So at this point in time, 20-point or more leads when we pit current Governor Kathy Hochul against any of the three Republican challengers. Now, I can hear you. You're saying, hey, wait a second, Don. Wait a second.
Hey, wait
you
a
just
second,
told
Don,
me that
second.
55% of New Yorkers wanted someone else. Where are those people? Well, we take a look at just that 55% who said, I want someone else. And who, when we pit just those people within these three horse races, now about 1 out of 7 of those people migrate over and say, okay, now that you gave me an opponent, I'll go back and vote for Kathy Hochul. About 40%, slightly more for Stefanik, slightly less for Lawler, even less for Blakeman, say, I'll vote for that person. So the Republican challengers are only getting about 40% of the 55% who said, I want someone else. The remaining approximately 40% of the vote for someone else can't even tell you when you pit the horse races. They say, I don't know. Those people either are going to be convinced. Those are the votes that are for grabs. Do your arithmetic. 40% of 55% is about 22%. That's enough to make it a tight race if indeed a Republican can win over all of those people who said both someone else and when given the current candidates said, I don't know, I'm not ready to make a decision. So is it possible? Yes. But right now, right this second, with what's going on in the state, what's going on nationally, Hochul, despite some dissatisfaction, despite some, you know, people looking for greener pastures, right now she is in a strong position heading into this very long election season for 2026.
Yeah, the interesting thing that's occurred this week as we're speaking is the fact that Elise Stefanik came as close as possible as she could to saying she's in the race. She sort of said it's a matter of when and not if. She hasn't made it official yet, but obviously you can see the top two Republicans there, Stefanik and Lawler, are maybe going to be in a fight for the nomination.
Right, absolutely. That could be a fight. One of them could say, I don't want to be engaged in that fight. It seems as though the support of President Trump is going to be important within that fight. If you had to handicap it, it appears as though Stefanik is closer, more closely aligned with, more closely in President Trump's inner circle than is Mike Lawler. But Lawler appears, based on his public appearances, to have been positioning for this race for quite some time. It does seem as though right now they can read this poll, and each of those two, Stefanik and Lawler, can say, I have just as good a chance as my opponent. And I think that's going to be a struggle for some time, but may very well get resolved before a primary. We'll see.
We certainly will. We're speaking with Dr. Don Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute, the Siena Poll. Don, you know, you mentioned the New York City primary, and while I have you on, I want to ask you about this. What we were hearing in news reports was that the runaway victor in that was going to be former Governor Andrew Cuomo. He was ahead in all the polls, but that did not happen. So any thoughts on that when it comes to what we were expecting and what actually happened?
Well, I think that, you know, it was a surprise. It was shocking to some. We saw Mandani closing in the polls as the election approached. It was a ranked choice in one of the final polls from my friend and colleague at Emerson. I'll give him a shout out. They had in the first round it as close as Cuomo up over Mandani by 2 points in the first round. Now, Mandani, of course, did far better than that. Didn't even need to go to ranked choice to have Cuomo concede the election. Certainly, if we're talking about polling, a primary election in June amongst only Democratic voters is a tough race to poll. But I think what we saw was that there was, in this case, an enthusiasm of voters who had never previously voted in mayoral primaries showing up, and that excitement that was generated by a charismatic candidate with progressive Democratic Socialist views, a change candidate, a populist candidate, really spoke to a significant number of most especially young voters, progressive voters, and by all accounts, former Governor Cuomo ran a somewhat lackluster campaign, and his experience did not outweigh the scandal that still adhered to him from when he left office. So looking back, it doesn't appear as shocking as it did on the night of the vote, but Mandani clearly surprised the political insider world, and now it's set up to be a very interesting general election campaign where Cuomo is still on the ballot, doesn't seem to really be running, but Eric Adams is now trying to grab that lane of experience, of technical know-how, of centrist, moderate, and see whether he can hang in and get reelected. Mandani certainly has captured the interest and imagination of the left, and has drawn tremendous attention from the right, who now want to apparently paint him as the poster child of Democrats all across the country and run against him, you know, when he's only running for mayor of New York City, not for president, not for you know, offices across the country. So a surprising event. Some have argued that this populist appeal is sort of reminiscent of Trump's appeal on the right, that Mandani has captured the populism on the extreme left and has spoken to a group of voters who felt like government simply hasn't been working for them. They want a change. They want someone who's going to really be open to, some would call it, radical change.
You are listening to The Capital Connection. He is Dr. Don Levy, the Siena College poll. We're talking about the New York City primary, and Siena College hasn't done any polling on that, but it's a fascinating discussion, and I appreciate your thoughts there, because it seems to me, in that particular case in the primary, that was a pox on the establishment, that Mandani reached out to these younger folks and folks who were interested in their needs being taken care of, freezing the rent and free buses and other things like that. But we've seen that before, and we're currently witnessing and have witnessed Senator Sanders and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez going across the country with huge crowds talking about a lot of the similar things that he is a Democratic Socialist, that's Mandani, has grabbed hold of. So this isn't new, and to me, it just shows the giant division in the Democratic Party over what message they want to grab onto and use as they campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. There is clearly a division within the Democratic Party. The enthusiasm appears to be with Mandani, with AOC, with Bernie Sanders. You know, I think, bringing it back to the gubernatorial election here in New York, that Antonio Delgado may try to capture some of that. And say that he's the more progressive candidate. He's the candidate who's going to grab that group of voters who say, you know, listen to me. It's time for you know, a movement towards the left. As far as nationally, we just haven't seen who is the leader of the Democratic Party. You know, we have our own senior senator Chuck Schumer, who, of course, is the minority leader. But there have been calls, of course, for him to step aside for younger leadership. So the Democratic Party is more than likely going to look different in the next election cycle.
Let's get back to your poll, where you've looked at something that has taken 10 years to pass through the legislature in New York, and that's medical aid in dying. Supported nearly 2-1, and yet we still don't know if the governor's going to sign that legislation. There's some steady pushback that's come, but the folks who wanted the legislation worked for 10 years to try to mitigate some of the opposition.
Right. We have it right now at 54% support the legislation, 28% opposed. A meaningful percentage, 13% in the middle. They can't take a position. Certainly if it's a majority rules perspective that the governor is going to listen to, then perhaps she's going to sign the bill. It did, as you point out, take 10 years. When we've polled this issue in the past, we had similar results. In 2023, we had it at 58% support, 30% opposed. So it's been hovering in that mid-50s range. Now, you know, you follow these numbers, and you know that sometimes a major social, cultural kind of issue doesn't really get over the top until we reach 60%. Majority sometimes doesn't move the legislature. In this case, the legislature moved. Now we're waiting for the governor. As you point out, there is a strong lobbying on the opposition side, and she's got a difficult decision because should she go ahead and sign a bill that was passed by both houses that's supported by 54% of New Yorkers, she's going to alienate some powerful interests who have are very, very strong in their opposition. And 28% of all New Yorkers, some of whom are her voters. So a tough call lying ahead for the governor. But it's finally, and in the eyes of those folks who are in favor, and, you know, this is an issue that most of us have had experience with, someone in our family being ill, someone in our family perhaps being in hospice care. And so we've had experience with, that moment in life. And it's a tough call. It's a tough call for most New Yorkers. But clearly, a majority support the legislation, giving people the right to make that decision to end their own life. That is something that we don't know, of course, when the governor is going to make that decision. Could be quite some time before she decides whether to sign that bill or not. We'll stay tuned.
He certainly will. Dr. Don Levy, you have a number of support or oppose. These are bills that have been passed by the legislature. We just talked about a couple of them, but I'm always kind of knocked out by, for example, reforming New York's prison system by requiring comprehensive audio and video surveillance in common areas of state correctional facilities. Wait, we don't have that already? And of course, for most New Yorkers, that's a no-brainer. They support that.
Yeah, we sort of had a list of things that, came out of the most recent session. They all seem, to a certain extent, no-brainers. The one that you point out, comprehensive audio and video surveillance, 76%. Expanding the power of the AG to sue businesses on behalf of consumers over unfair or abusive practices. Again, wasn't she able to do that already?
Yeah. Okay.
But 65% there. You look at Republicans, a plurality of Republicans support that. You look at conservatives. Plurality there. So even the groups who would be most concerned with perhaps a potential overreach by an AG still support that. AI mandating state agencies to disclose when they use AI systems. Again, overwhelming support there, and I think we'll see additional legislation relative to regulating AI. It's, of course, being discussed in the big, beautiful bill that's fought over in the United States Senate at present, but we'll continue to see work on that. And then another one, creating a new state office of utility consumer advocate to appear on behalf of consumers when utilities seek rate increases. Again, some might perceive that as activist, but 67% support. Large majority support, again, across every political persuasion. Another thing that we took a look at, again, that is currently in progress, enacted, is congestion pricing
yes.
in Manhattan.
Let's end with that, because that is interesting to me. Already some evidence, data-driven, as well as anecdotal, that it's working, but New Yorkers still don't want it. They want it gone.
Only 37% across the entire state say it should remain. Plurality, 44% eliminated. Clearly a break. Democrats support it. Republicans oppose it strongly, 74-12 amongst Republicans. The interesting one is New York City versus New York City suburbs. Folks who live in New York City. And, of course, New York City is five boroughs. The congestion pricing is only in Manhattan and only in a section of Manhattan. But still, a plurality, 45% to 35% of New York City residents, New York City voters, say it should remain in place. It's working. But the strong opposition comes from suburbs, people that live in Westchester, people who live in Long Island, who oppose it 58-29. Again, we're looking at something that has become a hot potato, being argued back and forth between New York State, the governor, and President Trump's administration. President Trump's administration took sort of a hiatus on it for a little while, but I think they will be coming back, whether this summer or early fall, to take a stronger position relative to congestion pricing. So New Yorkers mixed at this point, New York City folks, and I think you're absolutely right. There's been data saying it worked. I was in Manhattan recently, and it did seem less congested in the theater district than it had on other trips there. I paid my toll, by the way. But I think that right now it's in place. The governor is standing with this data that says it's working and is going to fight hard to keep it in place.
Well, obviously, a lot to come in New York State government and politics. And when it comes to elections, it's like a whole year in one day these days. We'll have to get you back, Dr. Don Levy, the director of the Siena College Research Institute, the Siena Poll. That's scri.siena, siena.edu. I can't thank you enough for talking with me this week. Happy 4th to all. And we'll catch up with you the next time you drop one of these polls.
Always a pleasure, and I look forward to it, David. You have a great holiday.
You too.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.